This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by the Parent House. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here in a very special program today. We're joined by the Honorable Robert Wilkie, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, joining us from the nation's capital. Mr. Secretary, thanks for being on today.
Thank you, Kyle. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, previously, before you became Secretary of the VA back in 2018, you've got over 20 years of service at the national and international levels, Under Secretary of Defense for Personnel Readiness, and during the Bush administration, I know you served with both Donald Rumsfeld and Robert Gates as Assistant Secretary of Defense for 4 years. How did you get involved in this line of service? I mean, did you wake up one day in fifth grade and say, this is what you wanted to do?
Well, actually, it's pretty close to that. General Mattis used to say that I was born in khaki diapers, and I see that as a badge of honor. I still serve in the Air Force, but I'm the son of a combat soldier. My father was a senior officer in the 82nd Airborne. Our family's devotion to service goes back really to the Revolution. So this was a natural thing, although to fully answer your question, I was very happy as the Undersecretary of Defense, and then all of a sudden this came, and it was unexpected, but because of the world I grew up in, I automatically said yes, and it is a great honor to serve here. Actually, I'm sitting at the desk that was occupied at one time by General Omar Bradley, who ran the Veterans Administration right after World War II.
Wow. Well, and you are in Washington, D.C. Today, and we appreciate you talking with folks in Roseburg, Oregon. Let me get right into some things we wanted to cover. One of the things with the VA right now is called Mission Act Implementation. Yeah. Could you explain what that is and also focus on how the changes are going and how you believe this will increase the quality of care for veterans?
Well, before I answer that, I did want to finish the biographical question that you asked me. I'm very familiar with Oregon in between administrations. I spent a great deal of time with a company that's no longer with us, CH2M Hill, which was founded right there in Corvallis. And in fact, at Oregon State, most of the athletic facilities were named after the company. So that's why it's good for me to always be talking to folks at Oregon. But the Mission Act really transforms veterans care in that it's the first time I think any service department of the federal government says that the needs of the patient, the needs of the individual, come first. And what that means is the medical interest of the veteran comes first. If we don't have a service that a veteran needs, or if that veteran lives a certain number of minutes away from a facility, then we give that veteran the option of going into the private sector. This kicked off on June 6th. Since that time, we've sent about 1.7 million veterans into the private sector. But just as important, we open up urgent care. We allow veterans to use urgent care, put them on a par with their neighbors, keep them out of the emergency rooms. That lessens the trauma on them as well as their families. But mission for me is an act of balance. It is not privatization, and it certainly can't be privatization when the budget I presented to the Congress last year was $220 billion, calling for 400,000 employees. But it does put the emphasis on what the veteran needs and not what is important to the bureaucracy.
Now, I've had some veterans over time tell me, especially older veterans, that they really value being treated at a VA facility.
Absolutely.
And by VA doctors who they believe would better understand veterans. So there's some concern there about sometimes being involved with private sector doctors. How would you address that?
Well, that's absolutely correct. I mean, I am surrounded by folks who have incredible military experience. I'm a colonel. I'm sitting across from our public affairs assistant secretary, James Hutton. He's a colonel. My chief of staff's a colonel. The head of my veterans health administration is the real Hawkeye Pierce, former deputy surgeon general of the Army. That's vital. But the bottom line is, what gets the veteran well? And if we can't do what that veteran needs, then we give that veteran the option of going into the private sector. I will say that veterans are voting with their feet. We set records this year in terms of the number of appointments we had at VA across the country by millions. And you're right. People are comfortable going where folks understand the culture, where folks speak the language. That's not going to change. But in those cases, we'll say we need a cardiologist who has a specialist in a particular type of heart surgery. If we don't have it, it does the veteran no good to wait around and say, I want to be treated by a VA doctor, when that veteran's health is in the balance. So that's why we would give that veteran the option of going into the private sector.
Suicide, a big issue to veterans of all ages and in all conflicts.
Yes.
What is the VA doing to provide resources to help veterans who need mental health help?
Sure. Well, you've just hit on two issues that America has not focused on. So I'm going to go back to the 1890s. That's when the United States Army first started taking statistics on soldier suicide, in the 1890s. We've seen veteran suicide, soldier suicide, pretty steady since then. Today, about 20 veterans a day take their lives. Of those 20, 60% we don't see in VA. The majority of those we don't see are from my father's era, Vietnam. So as the head of the president's task force, my job is to create a national medical roadmap for suicide prevention that brings together the National Institutes of Health, HHS, Department of Defense, HUD, and us, but also open the aperture so that we get resources to the localities, to charities, to non-governmental organizations to help us find those veterans. For VA itself, though, we have same-day mental health services. Our Veterans Crisis Line is open to veterans and their families, 1-800-273-8255. There is no voicemail. The wait time is 8 seconds. We get about 1,700 calls a day. We act physically on 200 to 300. But you hit it. We have never as a country sat down and talked about mental health. The last person to do that was Rosalind Carter in the 1970s, and nobody paid attention to her. That is what we hope to achieve, to start this national conversation. And last thing I'll say quickly is that when you and I were young, the leading cause of death, let's say when we were in high school, the leading cause of death amongst our peers was automobile accidents. The leading cause of death for American high school students today is suicide. The New York City Police Department is being ravaged by suicide. This is not a problem that is particular to veterans. It is affecting all levels of society. I think, though, because most Americans understand what happens when an American puts on a uniform and then takes that uniform off, that we can help by providing a roadmap on how to combat this.
With those resources that you mentioned available, one of the things I've been told, though, by some of the veterans groups locally, is there a lot of veterans out there that are reluctant to access the services that are due them just in general, but especially that leads to a disconnect in that area. If you have a man or woman who is going through a mental health issue, considering suicide, things like that, they're a veteran. They don't normally access the VA for anything else. How do you reach out and essentially find them?
Well, many levels. First of all, through the veteran service organizations. VFW just did a survey that is actually on point to what you just said. We have a satisfaction rate of 90% among VFW members, but the second part of that survey was that same 90% is actually going out and urging their fellow veterans who are not part of our system, who are not in contact with us, to reach us. But the problem is actually bigger than that. Majority of those who take their lives are from Vietnam. We have not closed the final circle on that terrible time. I certainly saw it growing up. My father was terribly wounded in Cambodia. These are people who have not had very warm feelings towards society in general and the United States government in particular, which is why we need to use the same formula we've used in our homelessness prevention efforts, which is to use charities, to use local governments to go out and find people and convince them to come in for that kind of support. The other thing, we are using groups like Walmart, give you an example. I just kicked off the first veterans telehealth clinic that sits in a Walmart. Walmart and its reach toward in rural America is impressive, where a veteran can go into the Walmart, into a room that looks like a living room, and actually talk to VA professionals. The other thing, last thing on this subject, for rural Oregon, and that's telehealth. My budget for telehealth last year was $1.1 million. I expect it to be higher. That is what I have been told and what I have seen is the key to making an impact in the mental health arena by not forcing veterans to come into a large hospital surrounded by people they don't know. They can do it in their home. They can go to the public library. Hopefully they will be able to go to more facilities like Walmart and do it. So that's another innovative approach to the mental health issue.
My next question kind of ties in with what we talked about at the beginning with the Mission Act, but in the area of community care, talk more about the shift in this area and address those concerns about getting the care that a veteran believes they need when they go to a community provider.
Well, that's part of this change. In the past, the CHOICE Act in the last administration, they talked about choice, but they just sort of sent people out willy-nilly into the private sector and were not able or were not willing to pay the bills. We have set in motion community care standards, community care payment that gets payment to our private sector partners so that they can help us with those veterans. Again, it goes back to mission. It's not that much different from the concept that if you need to go into the private sector, then you have access. But at its heart, though, I use examples. I'll use a Minnesota example, and it's something that I saw firsthand. The notion that we were going to making veterans drive from northern and central Minnesota all the way to Minneapolis, a 400 or 500 miles round trip. And in the meantime, they passed the Mayo Clinic, they passed the University of Minnesota, that we did not alleviate some of the burdens on that veteran by allowing that veteran and his family to access other health care just made no sense. It makes no sense if you believe that the health of the veteran is the most important part of our mission.
Secretary of the Veterans Affairs, Robert Wilkie, with us. Secretary, some reports indicate the VA has not filled thousands of health positions that have been budgeted. The money is there to pay for them. Is that the case? And if so, how do you address the unfilled jobs in the VA, especially in the area of health care?
Well, two ways to address that. First of all, we're not immune from the shortages that exist in America as a whole. America is short mental health professionals. America is short primary care physicians. However, what is not appreciated about our condition is that we have 390,000 employees. The government only pays for 393,000 employees. So we're really close to our ceiling. My job is to find those professionals to fill critical needs. And again, we're competing against the rest of the American medical system. And we have to be more creative in terms of loan forgiveness, in terms of relocation pay. I'm very much in favor of something that I've talked to the Congress about, is creating the equivalent of a VA Peace Corps, where we provide loan relief in exchange for a number of years of service in rural America. You know that because of what's been going on in Roseburg. I want to keep that facility open 7 days a week, but I've got to get more professionals in there to go beyond Monday through Friday, and it is one of those places in America that I'm doing my utmost, and so is my staff, to find the folks we need to make sure that that place is open 7 days.
And does that include the potential for incentives to encourage especially younger providers who may not normally be drawn to a more rural area to come to places like Roseburg?
Absolutely. And it's something that we need to look at across the country. But let's just look at it from the veterans' perspective. The majority of our veterans are rural or live in rural America or Native America, the two groups that have the highest percentage of service amongst any of their fellow Americans. And that's why we have to be more creative. I have the ability that most of my other, well, all the rest of my cabinet colleagues don't have, to go outside of the traditional personnel management stovepipes. But I really want to create a program whereby, in exchange for a decade or so of service, we take care of that doctor and that nurse's debt.
Is the VA keeping up with technology in terms of how it communicates with veterans? But also, kind of a wrinkle in this is that many older veterans themselves don't often utilize as much, or in some cases any, media, social media, the web, things like that. How do you balance that?
That's true. We balance that through the traditional means of communication, commercials, telephones. When Mission Act kicked off, we sent out about 10 million envelopes full of information. We constantly send brochures out, particularly to those Americans we know come from the generation where those things you just described were just not part of the way they were raised. I went through Times Square a few days ago, and there's this massive electronic billboard in the middle of Times Square addressing the veterans you just mentioned, and telling them where to call. So we hit it on many levels, and then we rely certainly on the veteran service organizations to get out the message through their membership and have their members talk to friends who are not necessarily part of that organization.
Now, you've been at the helm officially for about a year and a half, acting secretary for a while before that. Now, being there a while, what do you think is the biggest thing the VA can do to improve the quality to veterans, and how can you make it happen?
Well, the most important thing is, and it was for me, is to make sure that the institution was calm, that the institution had a focus, that we provided customer service amongst the employees, which was absolutely essential if we expected to provide good customer service for our veterans. We instituted something that I learned in the Air Force called the High Reliability Organization, and I won't go into all of the details, but it was something that our nuclear Air Force put in place, and one of the reasons why we haven't had any nuclear accidents in the Air Force, and that it gives everyone in the chain a say, not only in the leadership of the particular organization that they're part of, but also in the day-to-day workings of, let's say they work in sterile processing or they're in surgery. It allows them a voice, and they have a voice in how their workplace operates. And I think that is a sea change from the way things have been done here, where everything was top-down. Last thing is, I'm not a medical professional. I do know soldiers. That has been my life. That's been my family's life. I don't send out directives every day telling cardiologists or primary care physicians or mental health nurses how to do their jobs. I let them do it. But we also have let it be known that, unlike in the past, we're going to hold people accountable. We've released over 8,000 people who were not performing up to the standards that our veterans expect. And that is the biggest change that we've had here, because now people know it is not business as usual.
Robert Wilkie is the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. Mr. Secretary, we hope you can make it out to Roseburg sometime to see us.
Well, I thank you, and I thank you for what you do, and I thank you for your courtesy.
All right. Thanks for being on our program as well today.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
All right. That wraps up Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
On News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by The Parent House. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.